and abundant, sufficient for the luxury and convenience of the people in Jeff.
Jeffries Show.
And welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show. My guest today is someone who I've admired for a long time, and it's wonderful to be able to communicate with people that you admire. Cindy Sheehan, I'm just going to call you the world's foremost peace activist. Is that okay title with you? I mean, I can't think of anything more important than being, you know, because you're really advocating something that is kind of out of vogue now, unfortunately. The left is pretty much, the establishment left has abandoned it, yeah. And the right have it. So it's wonderful that you're here. So it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And I want you, just for the sake of the audience, who might not know, I think most people know your story, but talk about how you got started down this path, because I don't know that you were political until you know, a tragedy kind of compelled you to go in this direction.
Yeah, I was, I wouldn't call myself political, but I was not apolitical either. So I wasn't an activist, or, you know, I never went out and knocked on doors. I never believed like in any candidate strongly or whatever. I grew up, my formative years from junior high to high school were basically in the Vietnam War. So I was appalled by that, and I was appalled by what the United States was doing there. So I was never like pro-war, pro-establishment, but I wasn't even really anti-establishment either until my son was killed in Iraq on April 4th, 2004. And then I had a time to do a deep dive into the empire. I got fired from my job that I was working at when he was killed. And so, yeah, I just, the more I investigated, especially around 9/11, the more, you know, the events on 9/11 and the cover up, the more I just started to think that, see, when during Vietnam, I thought, and in the aftermath, I thought that, you know, it was a mistake, that the U.S. probably meant well, but, you know, it just got out of hand and they made all these mistakes. And then, you know, I laughed back because I was so naive. And, you know, after Casey was killed and after all the investigation I did into the lies of the Iraq War and Afghanistan, and I was one of the only ones against Afghanistan at that time too. I didn't see any reason for the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan either. I just realized, no, that these things aren't mistakes, they're intentional. And these wars for empire and for profit and for resource control, for domination, are actually planned things. They're not mistakes. They're not like, oops, you know, look at, we were walking along the desert and we fell into a rock. You know, they're definitely planned acts of terror by the United States government. And of course, you know, it's global allies and support mechanisms, you know, like the media and Wall Street and bankers and things like that. So that's the half I got.
Well, tell me, I'm not aware of you being fired. I guess that's kind of an early example of like a cancel culture or something. They just basically fired you because you were an anti-war activist?
See, I have suspicions. Are you still there?
Yeah. I couldn't hear you for a second.
All of a sudden, the telephone changed colors.
Yeah.
I just had got this new job with the county of Napa Health and Human Services, and Napa is like the next county over north of ours, like northwest. And so When Casey was killed, I had to take a lot of time off, but they were very understanding until, like, I appeared on Channel 7 News, which was is ABC up here, on the 4th of July, speaking out against the war. And I think that was the first time anybody ever saw me on TV. And then all of a sudden, all the time I had to take off became a problem. And they said, we have to let you go. We need to cover this job. So I don't know. Could have been my boss, my immediate supervisor. Her son was in Iraq at that time. And I could just, she couldn't even look at me. And I understand that because she was looking at her worst nightmare, right? Every day that I came to work, she was looking at her worst nightmare. So it could have been political. I mean, they said that we won't. They were like, "This is how generous capitalism is. We won't contest your unemployment if you apply for unemployment and blah 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 stuff like that." So yeah, that's basically what happened. And I haven't had a job like that since then. So not that I don't have a calling. Or, you know, a passion, but I don't have a job where I get a paycheck.
Well, what we do doesn't pay very well. I can attest to that. There's not any big paychecks when you're advocating peace or pointing out corruption, or at least I haven't found anybody that'll pay
well,
very much for it.
Especially if you recognize that if you're truly nonpartisan and you look at the Democrats and the Republicans, and you know that they're both, you know, swamp dwelling bottom feeders, to put it nicely,
right,
without, you know, using the words that I like to use, then, you know, then there's no, like, you don't have any support. If you're on the right, look at Ron Paul, ran for president. He had so much support. So many, he ran as a Republican. So much money. And Bernie Sanders, the same way, ran as a Democrat. So much support, so much money. And when I first started this, I was a Democrat. And I got a lot of support. At Camp Casey, a lot of those – Camp Casey, in case your listeners don't know, is almost 16 years ago. On August 6th, I decided to go to Crawford, Texas, where George Bush had his pretend ranch there, his vacation home, and, you know, ask him what noble cause, because he said all the soldiers that died in Iraq died for a noble cause. So I decided if he didn't meet with me, I would just sit on the road, Prairie Chapel Road, and stay there until he met with me or until he left.
We lost you again, Cindy.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, so your phone got down. Something's muffling. I mean, yeah, you're like something's hitting your microphone or something.
Well, I don't know. I just have my computer here.
Or someone doesn't like what we're saying.
Yeah. So anyway, we set up a peace camp in Crawford, Texas, in August of 2005, and I was a Democrat then, and a lot of forces. Democrat forces that say they're for peace, but we know if they're for Democrats, they also can't be for peace, came out. And I, you know, after about a year of this, I recognized the hypocrisy and the treachery of the Democrat Party and their, you know, so their allies in the peace industrial complex. So I left the Democrat Party, and then almost all the support dried up at that point.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, like, I think you've put, and I love reading your posts and what you write, because you're like me. I started out as a Democrat as well. I used to think they were the good guys. I'm still a Kennedy fanboy, probably to my detriment, but I mean, that's just, you know, the way I was brought up, and I still have a blind spot for him, probably. But once you realize they're not the good guys, and you really realize that, because you got kind of like Julian Assange. Assange got much better press when he was pointing out something that Bush did.
Right.
But as soon as he went after Hillary Clinton, oh my God, he's a dangerous, and he needs to be. And that kind of happened to you too, right? When you started criticizing Obama, because you pointed out, well, you know, he's kind of doing the exact same thing. Nothing much has changed here.
Right. Yeah. That's. I can just see, like, every 4 years, every 4 years when there's a presidential election, my circle of support or allies or comrades gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And it was like, okay, I could not, I couldn't stomach Obama. He had only been a senator for 2 years, but he didn't do anything in that 2 years that would rate anything that close to what the peace movement, all the hopes the peace movement put into him, or the peace industrial complex, as I like to call them. And so, of course, like he was president for 3 days and he drone bombed a wedding and killed dozens of civilians. Well, he didn't push the button, but he's, if we're going to criticize Bush for the same thing, Obama needs to be, and this is a thing, Donald, that really bothered me. Cindy, we just need to get him in office, then we can hold his feet to the fire. And so the minute I tried to hold his feet to the fire, and I send out this thing to my subscribers and my supporters, I can literally just watch unsubscribe, unsubscribe,
Oh, jeez.
unsubscribe, unsubscribe. I started out, I had a really large mailing list because when Obama was running for president, I ran against Nancy Pelosi for Congress. So we got quite a large list, and that evaporated, almost overnight. And then the Bernie Sanders thing, when I said, come on, guys, he's terrible. He's terrible on Palestine. He's terrible on these imperial wars. Just because he says some populist things doesn't mean he's an ally of peace. Then unsubscribe, unsubscribe, and Cindy, you're such a purist, blah, blah, blah. They're acting like being a purist is like, I don't like the way Bernie Sanders combs his hair or something. I don't like his votes or his support for imperial wars and his support of every Democrat warmonger that has been put forth since he's been, a prominent politician like Bill Clinton,
Ah, yes.
Barack Obama, Joe Biden. He talks a good game against the system, but as soon as that he gets the nomination stolen from him, he capitulates and supports the system.
Exactly. And
Well,
blamed Russia just like everybody else.
and blames Russia. I can't stand these people. So when I and then Joe Biden, I'm supposed to support this, this horrible decades-long swamp dwelling warmonger, war criminal. How could anybody ask that of somebody who, I didn't support any of your war criminals for the last, 17 years. Why, what makes you think I would support this war criminal?
Because Trump, and that's the next thing. What I really love that is you got basically. I mean, anybody who's read anything you've written or listened to you talk knows that you wouldn't be a fan of Donald Trump, but you were accused of that, as was I. Now, I was a little more sympathetic to him just because of his campaign rhetoric. But what we were trying to point out, and I saw you point it out over and over again, is that it's not like everything was hunky dory, and then Trump came along and, oh my God, he's so much worse, he's so different. You pointed out that nothing has changed, and I could see people getting angered at you because they wanted you to have Trump derangement syndrome.
Right. So now the thing is, Donald, when we don't like believe the narrative on COVID, we're Trumpsters. We're right-wing Trumpsters, and I'm just like, are you saying, or what are you trying to say, that left-wing liberals don't have critical thinking skills?
And Trump is claiming credit for the vaccine that they love. I don't get it.
No, I'm like, you're taking the Trump warp speed poison, and you were against Trump for 4 years.
And the Trump people are just as deluded because the cult still loves him, and just they, when people try to point out, he keeps claiming credit for this vaccine that 80 million of is BS and very dangerous probably. And they actually have a theory. I don't know if you've read it. It's great to watch the Trump cult, what they do, because they attribute everything to this incredible long range vision of the 8,000 degree chest that Trump is flying. And so their new thing is that Trump actually pushed the vaccine, because if he hadn't have, we would have been locked down for 5 years. So he saved us from that. That's their new theory.
Oh my God. And what gets me about them also is the same thing about the Hillary Clinton people. You know, when she lost the presidency, of course, it was Russia's fault. It wasn't because she's just an appalling person, appalling candidate, or so arrogant, so such part of the establishment. So it had to be Russia's fault, right? But they were like, I kept on asking them, and I think they really believe this. I would be like, so if Russia did meddle in the elections and Trump got removed from office, do you believe that Hillary Clinton would be made president then? That's not how things work. And that, I think that's what Trump people think. And I heard this like rumor that he's going to be president in August.
Oh, they that's it's the whole thing is 2 weeks. It's to wait another two. They've had like 10 dates already. It's hilarious. I mean, it's but I mean, both sides are so deluded, and I don't know where people like you and I go now, because they're so, you know, it's like everybody's red or blue, and we're, you know, kind of purple, or I don't know, we're a different color, but there's nowhere to go, because both sides, I mean, again, this vaccine thing, I heard today that not only is Trump, but, you know, Sean Hannity and Mitch McConnell and all these Republicans are really pushing big for people to get the vaccine. And they're obviously not playing, because they know that's the base that is opposing it, or the Trump supporters.
Right, exactly. It's just really, I just like wonder how we're ever gonna be able to make true change when all this stuff is just, just so partisan. Everybody has to line up behind their in their team, and they fight each other instead of realizing that the leaders of these teams are working for the same
Absolutely.
people.
There's a question in the chat room for you. What does Cindy think about the current withdrawal from the longest military conflict in U.S. history? I think they mean Afghanistan. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, if it really was happening, I think that was a good thing, but they're leaving 100,000 mercenaries there,
Oh.
and they're also claiming the right to use nearby military bases for drone strikes and airstrikes. So I think that it's just like the symbolic withdrawal from Iraq when Obama was president. It never happened, right? And even if it did happen, then that was all negotiated when Bush was president. And so of course they were able to leave mercenaries there, leave the largest embassy complex in the world, U.S. embassy complex in the world, no intention of ever leaving. When the U.S. Invades a country, they don't ever really leave. And so there has been a significant militant forces rising in Iraq because the U.S. Truly hasn't left there.
Yeah, that's and that's, you know, it just amazes me that, and obviously the Biden supporters are going to act about this the same way that, you know, with Trump, because Trump, how many times did Trump say we're going to withdraw forces from Syria, Afghanistan? I mean, he threatened. I don't still don't know what, if any, troops ever. I think he just kind of moved them around, if he did anything, because he always claiming he was going to do it, but
It's
he's
just shuffling. It's just shuffling around.
shuffling around. So I don't, but I don't know, you know, if there have been any mass troop exit. I didn't realize 100,000 are still there. So how many are actually being withdrawn then?
Mercenary.
Mercenary. So,
So they're private contractors. So
okay.
they're not really U.S. troops.
That's quite a presence.
Yeah,
100,000.
and
That's
again, they have many close enough air bases in the region to, and they've said that they're, have the right if there's any like terrorist activity or whatever to strike. And so, unfortunately for the people of Afghanistan, it's not really over.
No, it certainly isn't, and that's what it, you know. And if we look at the current climate, and you've, I think we're on the same page here with the tyranny we've been experiencing for the last over a year now. It's just amazing to me. But is it? I mean, why are we really surprised that our government is doing this when, you look at what they've done in these other countries, Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, look, Chelsea Manning is still, I guess, in danger. And I think the only good thing really Obama did in his entire administration was commute the rest of her draconian sentence at the end of his administration. But I think they may still prosecute again. But all that was doing was pointing out the horrible conduct of U.S. troops. So we see what they're doing, what they've done just in recent years in all these countries they're involved in. Are we really, why would we be surprised that the same government might turn all that stuff on American citizens?
Well, and so has the US ever not been oppressive towards people who live in this country? I mean, this country's founded on genocide and forced African slavery. So when we look at the way the country was founded, there's always been oppression here among certain segments of the population. I mean, we dragged immigrants over to build our railroads and build our roads and build our skyscrapers, and then, turned them into the latest scapegoats for things that were going wrong in the country forever. This isn't new. It's not something new, the immigrant blaming and whatever. So, and then a country that spends, literally trillions of dollars on empire maintenance and occupations and the military industrial complex, and then when we see that many of the police forces around the country have been militarized, of course it's just chickens coming home to roost in a more obvious way. And it's affecting, is it, see, what's this thing about the fascist COVID restrictions or mandates or measures, whatever you want to call them, is that it's affecting a more wider segments of our population, like almost 100%. So it doesn't matter what color you are, what socioeconomic, if you're not in the 1% of the 1%ers, it's affecting everybody, no matter where you live or any other kind of demographic. These things have pretty much affected most of the people. And so that's, I think, what is different. It's not just targeting certain segments of our population.
Well, you must really have become disillusioned, because when you first started out and you were suddenly thrust into the spotlight and chaining yourself to the White House fence, and I think you ran for pre didn't Roseanne, but weren't you Roseanne Barr's running mate at one
Yes.
time? For yeah, so I mean, you're suddenly around these celebrated people, and all those people were rightfully indignant about George W. Bush. I mean, he was not that he was, again, I think all these guys are horrible, but certainly he was horrible. So they were right, but then they did change. A lot of them changed as soon as Obama came in. But when do you think I think the left began the transformation really seriously in the 90s under Bill Clinton, because they don't care about the military. They don't even talk about the military industrial complex, except people like you. The average, they don't. I mean, I remember in the 70s as a teenager, we were concerned about the secret budgets of the intelligence agencies, which are still secret and probably larger than ever. Nobody talks about that stuff anymore. They don't talk about peace, and they don't talk about civil liberties, which used to be. I called myself a civil libertarian. There are hardly any civil libertarians left now, other than like people like Ron Paul on the right. When do you think they changed into these authoritarian monsters that want to just, patrol everything and control everything you do? I mean, that was not what liberalism meant when I was young.
I don't know. I would like to know when Phil Oakes wrote "Love Me, I'm a Liberal," because he pretty much nailed it, and it wasn't, recently. But I remember when I was laughing at people who believed that Russia stole the election from Clinton, and I was told, Cindy, more than one time, I was like, said, Cindy, like, what makes you think you know more than 17 intelligence agencies in this country? I'm like, what are you talking about? Those intelligence agencies that lie and murder? Why do you think that they're now all of a sudden telling the truth?
Because of Trump, right?
Because of Trump. So you know more than 17 intelligence? I said, all I know is they're lying.
Yeah,
You
why would
know,
they?
if they operate in the United States and around the world, they're just lying because that's what they always do. They lie, they murder, they overthrow governments that aren't friendly to the United States. If they can't get a president to leave, they'll murder him.
Yeah.
And so it just him or her, I don't know. I don't know if there's a, been it. Well, Bhutto, I'm not sure what happened, you know, what really happened to Benazir Bhutto, but you know, it just like it's laughable. It's
It
like, how
is.
do you believe the CIA or the
Yeah.
NSA or whatever these alphabet agencies are? They have an agenda and they never ever tell the truth. And
No.
that's what gets me about the COVID thing, Donald. It's just like, okay, you recognize that the US lies about wars and it lies about other countries. And I'm talking about, now I'm not just talking about liberals. I'm talking about people who were my comrades up until like 2020, that, you know, they're really hardcore anti-imperialists. And all of a sudden this virus starts getting talked about, and all of a sudden, and they become hardcore suckers of, you know, this propaganda teat. And they just like swallow it. And that's a really good metaphor, by the way. They swallow everything, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And how can you do that? These people lie. Fauci is long, you know, he's a long
Oh, I've been
liar.
writing. I've been writing about him for Hidden History 3, and I'm just looking at his crimes. I mean, he was responsible. The gay community used to hate him. I mean, I
Right.
don't know how many thousands of people died because of that AZT that he pushed on them. And you can see he was doing the same thing back then. Questionable testing, false positives, all
Right.
this stuff. I mean, and nobody looks at this guy's rep. Plus, he was responsible. He was right in the center of that 1986 act, which was passed by Congress because they had been, so many millions had been awarded to the parents of, I believe it was children who took the diphtheria vaccine. And they didn't want Big Pharma to have to pay anymore. So they changed that and they basically made him immune from lawsuits. So all those people out there who are harmed from these vaccines, good luck. You can go to vaccine court, which they established in 86. And I think if you get anything, it comes from us, taxpayers,
Right.
not Big
Oh,
Pharma.
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So then all of a sudden they believe everything the government says. They believe, and Trump, of course, didn't do people any favors by, you know, saying things that could be twisted out of context or sound really, really dumb. And did we have a pandemic because of Trump? Because they hated Trump so much. And people like places like MSNBC and CNN were just hardcore pushing this propaganda down our throats. It just is very confusing. It's how can my friends who were so skeptical of everything the media said, rightfully skeptical of everything the corporate media said and everything the government said, turn into such statists, such like fascists and pushing all this crap on us? And if you didn't believe, like we said before, if you questioned it, then you were a right-wing Republican Trumpster or QAnon. I've heard that
Yes,
so many
yes.
times this year. Cindy, you sound just like QAnon.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what they sound like. I don't even know what they say.
Well,
So
you'd have to make a
how can
whole
I
lot of,
sound like them?
you'd have to make like about 500 incorrect predictions, I think, to be QAnon, because that's what
Right.
they were famous for. This is going to happen. All the sealed indictments, the mass arrests are coming on this date, and they were like a cult leader telling the people to come up to the mountaintop and get on the UFO at a particular date. But yeah, I lost so many friends because of Trump. I call it the Trumpenstein Project. I think Trump is an actor. I think he was trotted out there to divide the country and kill the populist spirit out there. So, because what has happened since that, since Trump, a lot of the people that were going to Bernie Sanders or Trump back then, those are pop. They're populism on the left and the right variants of it, but populist issues is what drew people there because they didn't like the two-party system. They knew
Right.
they were terrible. After Trump, the two-party system has never been stronger because all the people that hate Trump, they like Joe Biden. They don't care who it is. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, these awful creatures that have been in D.C. forever, and they love them. As whereas the the people that fell for Trump think he's the savior and he's some kind of opposition, even though he did nothing in 4 years. He didn't do one thing to drain the swamp or anything, but that's where we are.
Right. Well, that's what presidents do. None of them come in and make things better.
No.
They always leave everything worse than they found it. So, you know, obviously they weren't Boy Scouts.
Oh, I missed a question in the chat room for you. Does Cindy have an idea about where the next cash cow for the military industrial complex will be?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think they're not finished with the Middle East, obviously, mm-hmm. or Northern Africa. And I don't think that we'll ever, and of course, I could be wrong because maniacs run Washington, D.C. But, you know, I think Russia and China are there. So the U.S. can build up arms, that have the nuclear arms race and, you know, other kinds of weapons, etc. So I don't think that there will be wars, like active wars with those two countries. Ever since my son was killed, it's always been Iran. Like,
yes, yes.
Like, has been like on the top of the list of countries that the neocons want to conquer, right?
Yep, they're number one.
Countries that the peace movement has feared, one of the countries the peace movement has feared that it will actively invade. You know, I think Iran has a correct rhetoric against the United States. And so I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen either. But there's 800, between 800 and 1,000 military installations around the world. And as long as they can fear monger people against China, Russia, North Korea mm-hmm. is also very scary. For
yeah.
some reason, people who don't know any different are afraid of places like Cuba and Venezuela.
Right.
They're even calling something a Havana syndrome now.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Which is crazy.
Tell us about it. I want to make sure we talk, because I emailed you. Somebody had told me that William Rodriguez, who was a 9/11 hero, went with you to Venezuela, but you said, no, that's not true. Tell us about, you know, when you went to Venezuela, because you went there and you knew Hugo Chavez, I believe, right? What were your impressions there?
Well, I do know, I just want to like finish my answer to that.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Babbling answer to that one question. You know, the next military cash cow might actually be here in the United States because of all of us, you know, people who believe that we should have autonomy over our own bodies and that we should be able to choose whether we want an experimental poison injected into our bodies or not. So I see a lot of segregation and isolation that could be leading to something even further. And I see all that pushback in France against vaccine passports. And I just hope that if the U.S. gets even more stricter, that there will be pushback. So, of course, there's a lot of money to be spent here too on detention centers and FEMA camps, like you said earlier, but, Hugo Chavez, yes, I know William Rodriguez,
okay.
Of course,
okay.
And
good.
I love him, and I can't remember, he might have gone to the Social Forum in 2006 in Caracas when I first met Chavez. He might have been there, but I know he wasn't in the meeting with me when I first met Hugo Chavez on that trip, but he was a very charismatic, very warm, not phony. You know, I've met with many phony U.S. politicians.
No, really.
Hugo Chavez was not a phony American politician. He was a very genuine American politician because, of course, he's also American. He's South American. He was. And I just want to say that no matter what I think of him personally, objectively, if I can be objective about him, honestly, is I think he's going to go down as one of the most significant figures of the early 21st century, for sure. And so he really forestalled U.S. imperial conquest in Venezuela. He helped use the resources and the wealth of Venezuela to make the lives of the Venezuelan people better. And he also helped places like Cuba and other poor places in Latin America. And so that's what I think about him personally and objectively, is that he was a great man and a very significant figure. And to be able to have been, I spent a lot of time with him. That wasn't the first time I went. The three times I went, I spent time with him. And the last time I went, unfortunately, is when he was first sick. And so I didn't get to see him that time. And when I found out he died, I was in a grocery store, and I just put my head on the, I was in the frozen food department, and I put my head on the door, and I just started sobbing. It was just like one of the saddest times recent, I mean, not a family member, but, you know, somebody close to me. And I wasn't weeping for myself. I was weeping for the people of Venezuela and the world that has been helped. And Hugo Chavez, a lot of people don't know, but he started a program here in the United States where he gave low cost or no cost heating oil to people in the Northwest, to poor people in the Northwest. And so, I mean, just generous things like that around the world that he did.
But somehow our government couldn't do that with its trillions of dollars. They couldn't do that. We had to depend on Venezuela.
Well, I'm going to say it was one of the Kennedys. I don't think it was
Robert Jr. is the one who started that stuff. But I don't, maybe
oh,
some.
Did he? Well, that might have been Robert Jr. that he reached out.
Yeah,
one of the Kennedys reached out to all the oil companies.
Yeah.
To do this, and Citgo was the only one that responded, or the National Oil Company of Venezuela.
Yeah. I've got a lot of questions in the chat room for you. First one, does Cindy have a top five questions about 9/11 that have never been properly answered or investigated?
I don't think it has been properly investigated at all. I think the 9/11 commission was a sham, and I just think that it's just very strange to me that I think was it 16 of the so-called hijackers were allegedly Saudi Arabian, but the U.S. attacked Afghanistan. I'd like to know why Osama bin Laden was never like in the top 10 most wanted list. I mean, there's just, oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I can narrow it down to five. The whole thing is just really off. The whole 9/11, what happened that day. I think everything is just off. Why did they clear out the rubble so fast before it can truly be investigated? There's just so many questions around that day. When George Bush came out and said, I don't want anybody talking about any crazy conspiracy theory.
My first
thought was, well, there it goes. It was a crazy conspiracy theory. Oh, wait, it was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy, and he was in on it.
If you had any doubts, so the chat room has corrected me. It was John. It was Joe Kennedy. Joe Kennedy III. Joe for oil. It said Joe for oil. Okay.
Yep, that's what it was. And so, I don't know if George Bush knew about it that day. He did look kind of.
He's certainly. Some of these guys are great at playing dumb. He did look stupid when he did.
Well, I mean, that was his default look, was stupidity all the time, right?
Yes, it was.
It certainly was people in the deep state. And I'm not just saying the U.S. deep state. It might have been a connected thing with Israeli operatives, et cetera. So.
And it's okay. What it says.
But I'm not sure what happened, but I know what didn't happen was the official story.
That's what I always say, Cindy. The same thing with JFK or anything is, it's not up to me. I don't know. I've been able to investigate, but I can tell you what they're telling you didn't happen. I know that. So let's investigate it. What were the circumstances behind Nancy Pelosi stabbing Cindy in the back about the Bush situation?
So I truthfully, this is kind of shameful to me, for me, shame on me. I never even heard of Nancy Pelosi before I went to Crawford, Texas. She was the minority, the House Minority Leader at the time, the most power, and she was in a district that's just right next to mine, San Francisco. So I had never even heard the name Nancy Pelosi. And people were like, oh, Cindy, Nancy Pelosi is going to call you. And I was like, okay, who's that? And they explained to me who that was. And I had met with my congressperson before Camp Casey, George Miller. Obviously, I'd met with Ron Paul. I knew who he was. I met with him a couple times before Camp Casey. I had no idea who Nancy Pelosi was. And so she called me and we chatted. And then when I went to DC after Camp Casey, I met with her in her office and she like looked at me right in the eyes. I can't stand people who can be such good liars that they can just look somebody in the eyes. And she said, Cindy, if you help us take back the House in 2006, we'll help you end the wars. And those were exactly her exact words to me. And so, like a dummy, I did that. And I actually did a lot of speaking engagements for Democrats that year. And 2005, this was like September of 2005. So the midterm elections were going to be in November of 2006. So I did a lot of work with them, for them. I really believed that they wanted to end the wars too. And so and of course, 2006, Nancy Pelosi campaigned on the promise that she would not impeach George Bush, right? Impeachment was off the table if she was elected to be Speaker of the House. And I think accountability is like a number one obstacle, or what do they say when they say the death penalty is not a deterrent? So I think that, like accountability for these war criminals might be a deterrent to future war criminals. So anyway, the first thing that they did when she was Speaker of the House was approve, like billions more, tens of billions of more dollars for the wars. And I just thought, well, you snake. And then I thought, she is a snake, and it was my fault that I believed her. It's like if you pick up a rattlesnake, it's going to bite you, right? And so if you lay down with sleeping dogs, you're going to get fleas or whatever. So anyway, that's how Nancy Pelosi betrayed. And she didn't betray me. She betrayed the world. She betrayed the people of Iraq and Afghanistan. And then when she was Speaker of the House and Obama was president and Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, they destroyed an entire country, Libya. They made it like this quagmire, this biggest open slave market in the world, and just absolutely destroyed that country. And so she's just an enemy of the people. She's an enemy of the world.
I'm with you on that. People have reminded us in the chat room some of the other things about 9/11. Building 7, molten steel melting, firemen made it to the 77th floor and reported that
All
everything was under.
of that stuff.
Huh? What's that? Yeah. People
All of that stuff is so shady.
taking off their clothes and jumping to their desk. That's one thing that I go down the rabbit hole on that. I'm sorry, I find that very strange. Israeli art students, all kinds of stuff. There's a question for you. Where? Oh yeah, has Cindy met with Oliver Stone or Jesse Ventura or April Gallup?
I've had Jesse Ventura on Cindy Sheehan's soapbox, which we should mention. And
Yes.
I don't know, I haven't met with Oliver Stone. I'm well aware of his work, and a lot of it is very, very good. And I don't know who the other person, April.
April Gallup. That is okay. Who is? Remind me in the chat room. Yeah, and I know that name, and I should know April. I get her mixed up with April Glaspie from the Iraq War, Kuwait. Who chat? If you're there, can you tell me who April? Tell us who April Gallup is. Okay, here it says Otter. Otto Palmer made it to the 78th floor in the second tower and said there were only a few isolated pockets of fire, and all he needed was a few lines to put them out. 2 minutes later, the tower collapsed. I mean, I hate to laugh at something like that, but I mean, it really is ridiculous.
Did that say Arnold Palmer made it to the
tower? No, that would be a great story. While drinking his Arnold Palmer lemonade and tea. No, on Oreo Palmer. I'm sorry. Okay, so April Gallup walked out of the Pentagon hole in the Pentagon explosion. Okay, I guess she was a witness to that.
No, I have not.
Yeah, the hole that was way too small for the plane. I mean, there's so many questions there, but obviously none of that gets.
Now I know. I know that incident, but I didn't remember that person's name.
Now, since you're as if you weren't already in enough hot water, but you know, being for peace in a country that just is perpetually at war. Mm-hmm. Now you're really going against the medical industrial establishment, which I worked for my entire life until I was fired a few years ago, fairly in a right to work state. But so I know how bad they are. And you went through a lot of that with your sister a few years ago. Right. I know. You know how bad they are. So what now you're on the, I mean, I've lost more people than I did over Trump over this COVID thing, because I was writing skeptically about it from the beginning, and people are, this is like the Holocaust. They're so emotionally invested.
Right.
And I have people that I've known for years online, or JFK, they just, you know, you're gone, dangerous, deleted, blocked. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that has that happened to you too, I assume.
Oh my God. So many people. Yeah. And a lot, like I said, a lot of people that I've been friends with for a long time and comrades with, who I thought were hardcore anti-imperialists. And you can't believe anything that's coming from the mouths of these liars. They're just scumbags and liars, all of them. So maybe once in a while they might tell the truth, but I'm certainly not going to believe anything they say until I do my own research on it. And so, you know, I've always been pretty natural. I had my babies at home, you know, things like that. And so I'm 64. I don't take one medication. I take a lot of supplements.
Yeah.
But after my sister died from breast cancer and became a victim of the medical industrial, I call it the cancer industrial complex.
Yeah.
I started to even become more natural, and I studied to be a holistic health coach. And so, you know, I trust natural immunity. And I know that if there was a thing called COVID, or if it was just a flu, it was a coronavirus that was going to be particularly bad that year. I don't know what happened. I know there was an illness. If it had been allowed to naturally, you know, be spread among the population, it would have been over with it, you know, the same a regular flu season does. Some vulnerable people, unfortunately, get really sick from the flu, and some people die. And, you know, I think it would have dissipated into the population. And like studies from Sweden and Finland say that the children become a natural break for, they're like a sponge. They take it in, they don't get sick, and they don't spread it. But what did we do? We closed all the schools in almost the entire country and put masks on children instead of allowing them to build up their own immunities. And I just read that kids are going to be coming down with so many respiratory illnesses and other illnesses because their immune systems have been like essentially canceled because of all of the cleaner, the disinfectant, the mask, the separation. You can't separate kids from each other.
That's
they need
awful.
To be together to help each other.
I mean, we're traumatized. Just imagine me little and wearing masks. You can't. What about being a teenager in love and you just, you know, just
that is awful.
It's really hideous what they're doing. There's some more, because I want to make sure you have time to promote what you want to promote at the end. Great question. I particularly love this. Cindy, besides Don Jeffries, where do you get your news from?
yeah, I'm, actually on another 30-day ban from Facebook. I think I've been banned from Facebook more this year than I have actually been able to be on Facebook. But I want to tell you, one of the first things I do in the morning is go through my news feed, and I get all kinds of wonderful information. And I think this past year, plus how many more months of lockdown lunacy that we've had and all this COVID crap, I've gotten a lot of good information from Global Research. I get a good, lot of good information from Robert Kennedy Jr.'s site. And I want to say that man is a saint, and
yes,
I will appreciate his sacrifice for all of us and for our children. And even before COVID, he was really on the vaccine issue, which is very important, and choice is very important.
And you know, one of the many great reasons why a lot of us were drawn to Donald Trump during his campaign is he was very skeptical of vaccines and autism,
right.
And he was originally going to have a vaccine autism commission chaired by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Right.
And this never happened. But so have you met RFK? Do you know him?
Yes, actually I did. I spoke at an event with him in Seattle.
Oh, he's one. I've been trying to get. I had Del Bigtree on my show, and I would love to have him on. Does Cindy keep in contact with Cynthia McKinney, another wonderful person?
Yes, Cynthia's out of the country, so
she usually is.
Not personally, but yeah, I think Cynthia has a lot of integrity. One of my favorite politicians, because she left the Democrat Party, she realized how treacherous they were.
Jeez.
And I would love to love Dennis Kucinich. Stays in the Democrat Party, and you know, anybody who thinks you can change that horrible institution from inside, really, I don't think they have their head screwed on completely correctly.
I want to get these questions though. Has Cindy or Don seen German attorney Raymir Fulmich interviewed on BitChute of Dr. David Martin regarding the many patents from years ago found in sequence of COVID-19? But I want to say, Reimer Fulmich, I forgot. I interviewed him last year. I'm trying to get him for this show, too. Have you seen that, Cindy? You know what he's talking about?
Yes, and I know what
he's
– yes, I know. Yeah, I have.
Okay. There's lots of good – lots of people like him out there, and Scott Jensen, Dr. Scott Jensen, Dr. Roger Hodgkinson. I've had all these people on my show. There's lots of
Dr.
Andrew Kaufman.
Dr. McCullough, Dr.
Yep.
Sherry
Tenpenny.
Who invented the,
yes.
the mRNA. He was one of the co-inventors of the mRNA technology. I forget what his name is, but I think he's Canadian.
I got so many questions for you because first of all, how, because we saw what's happened to Robert F. Kennedy, and I know what's happening in my family. I imagine it's you too, because we're the black sheep in families all over the country. And RFK Jr. and some of his siblings put out a big, you know, thing. We love our brother, but we hate what he's doing going into vaccines.
Right.
How
right.
has it been in your family? Or do you have support of your family? Or are you becoming ostracized even there?
Well, when I first started speaking out, my ex-husband's family denounced me, but in my own family, my children and grandchildren, we're all 100% on the same page with almost everything, but especially this lockdown and COVID stuff, which has been great, because if I had a child that said I couldn't see my grandchildren, like many of my friends, their children are prohibiting them from seeing their grandchildren.
Yes. Yes.
Unless they get vaccinated or whatever, I think I would go insane.
Yeah, that's
so it's cool to be with my family and hug them and have celebrations with them. And if that didn't happen, you know, I might be a blithering idiot by now.
Oh, I can't imagine what that again. But I'm seeing it in my own family to some degree. My kids aren't vaccinated. You know, my brother is. But I mean, it's a big mess. Do you know Cindy? Do you know Whitney Webb?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
She's been on my show, and she's interviewed me, and I've interviewed her, and thank you for reminding me, because she's done extraordinary work on
she
a
has.
Lot of this stuff.
She
and
has.
Her series on Jeffrey Epstein is
great.
Well, crazy.
She's been on my I protest twice, and I don't know, if you're listening, Whitney, or if you talk to her, ask her why she's not answering my emails anymore. I don't know what I did. We're on the same page.
She's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, well, I know she's become really
probably
big.
Not personal.
Yeah, well, she is. I know she's doing some great work. Well, I want to make sure you have enough time to promote everything. So talk about Cindy Sehan's Soapbox. Talk about what you're doing now. Occupy Peace. I think you're still involved with that with Gerald Celente. Whatever you want to promote.
Well, definitely Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and that's at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com. I'm working with a group on elder side that all the governors put, not all the governors, many governors put sick people in with elder people in long-term care facilities, and that's where most of the COVID-19 deaths came from that they're counting. And so we have a Justice for COVID-19 elder side. I think we coined that term, elder side. Site. And I know Occupy Peace, and I know that I spoke there. I'm not really involved with it, but my good friend is Anthony Frieda, and he's really involved in it. So I support that effort. So I think COVID-19 pretty much put me into semi-retirement. I mean, I can't travel. I'm not wearing a mask to travel anywhere, you know, for 10, 12 hours a day. So, I just do what I can, as much as I can do.
Well, that's one. There's a question here. What is Cindy's main project and effort these days?
Cindy Sheehan Soapbox is a podcast that I've had since 2009. I think everybody has a podcast now, but I think when I first started Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, it was pretty unique. And so it's just, it's an alternative to the corporate media BS that you find. Like I said, I had Jesse Ventura. I've had everywhere from Jesse Ventura, Michio Kaku. You have people that you admire. I have people that I look up to and admire and be able to bring on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Yeah, I was on there once a long time ago. I remember. So, and yeah. I was honored. The time is gone. I'm going to see how much time we have here. I'm still getting used. This is my new show. So before I 3 minutes, no rush. Okay. So we still have 3 minutes. Did I miss any questions in the chat room here? There were a lot of them here for you, but I might. Oh, well, on the April Gallup, apparently April and her baby were near the explosion at the Pentagon, and they sued Dick Cheney. I have to check that out. I've heard that name. Okay. And I want to see, I don't know. I imagine she wasn't successful. I mean, it's hard to sue somebody that was able to survive. How long did he survive without a heart or something? Or is that
right.
he's like the bionic man or something. So,
right.
You don't want to mess with him. So just in the little bit of time we have. So do you, I mean, I personally think that we have to look at the bottom now. I think we have to try to make change at the lowest levels because the corruption is so deep. I think it's lost. I don't think there's any chance with Congress or anything like that. I think the lockdown shows that. But do you agree? Maybe, if we could start making inroads at the low level, maybe get some honest mayors in there. Maybe, we can start, it'll spiral upwards.
Well, I think that we need to join each other in community. And I'm not even sure if we need to elect anybody. Just find people that you can be in community with and be able to share goods and services and have people who aren't brainwashed in your little intentional community. And I think that that's the best way that we can move forward. We have a very precarious future. And I never thought when this all started, you remember all those swine flu and all those kind of flu H1N1 scares and everything, that everybody was going to die and it just kind of fizzled out. That's what I kind of thought was going to happen with COVID-19. And I never, as much as I know this country is evil, I never imagined we'd be where we are today. From March of 2020, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know what, we know these people are capable of anything and everything, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a very precarious future. So I think as much as we can kind of pull together with people who are like-minded, and it doesn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican, or whatever, nothing like me, is that if we can work together to build a better future for our families and our communities, I think that's what we got to do.
Absolutely. Well, Cindy Sheehan, you're a real profile in courage. And like I said, I hope we meet someday, but I hope it's not in a FEMA camp. And that's my thing. But you keep doing the great work you're doing. And I think my music should be coming up here. Chuck, again, this is the third show.
How awkward that your music's not coming up when we're saying goodbye.
Yeah, well, it's... I think I hear it now. I hear it now. Okay, Cindy, thanks. So thank you so much, Cindy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks for the invitation, Donald. Bye-bye.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Of fake news, fake politicians, and fake fiat currency, it's getting harder to find the genuine article. That's why when it comes to precious metals, I call the team I can trust. This is David Knight for my friends at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is your home for gold and silver coins, bullion, jewelry, and more. Prices and inventory are updated daily, so you get the most competitive possible pricing. And when it's time to sell your gold and silver items, they pay top dollar. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange also accepts and deals in Bitcoin. Call or text the owner, Tony Arterburn, today at 888-667-1836. That's 888-667-1836. Or just go to wisewolf.gold. From bullion to Bitcoin, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to The Donald Jeffrey Show.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
John Barber, and you're listening to the most informed man in America, my friend, fellow author, and raconteur, the great Donald Jeffrey Show.
Ron Paul, you're listening to The Donald Jeffrey Show.
DonaldChili.com.
Revelation through conversation. Now back to Donald Jeffries.
And welcome back. I hope you guys liked Cindy Sheehan, just one of the many friends I've made in the cyber sense that I admired from afar with her great work. And, you know, she's the genuine article. You know, she couldn't and she couldn't be bought off as so many families. You know, usually the patriotism and the flag waving works where if you I mean, I can understand it. You know, I've never been through anything like that. I certainly would never want to go through the worst nightmare possible, to lose your child, especially in a stupid, you know, meaningless war. Before I start ranting, I should give out the number. Let's open up the phone lines. It is 319-527-5016. Again, 319-527-5016. I love hearing from people, so please call in, discuss whatever you want, a show, any kind of issues, you know, and I pretty much talk about everything. But I wanted to say that Cindy wasn't, maybe bought off is too harsh a term, but it's easy to understand if you've lost your child and the government, you know, you have a flag draped coffin and they're maybe giving you, in the best circumstances, giving a Purple Heart, a posthumous Purple Heart, something like that, and calling your son or a hero. I can certainly understand, you know, that could be heady stuff, and it does take, I imagine it takes some of the edge off of just the tragic loss. Is that, well, at least he died nobly and now everybody, you know, he'll always be remembered as a hero. So I can understand that, but Cindy, to her great credit, never fell for that, and, you know, realized that her son died for nothing, much as Pat Tillman's family, you know, the same way. They didn't fall for that nonsense. And of course, indeed, and Patrick, I don't know the exact circumstances of Cindy's son's, Casey's, death, but I do know that in Pat Tillman's death, they lied about it originally, and then eventually they had to admit it was from friendly fire. And an astonishing number of deaths in wartime actually take place from friendly fire, and Oliver Stone's movie Platoon was really the first one to kind of examine that. And not only do they take place in friendly fire, but it's, you know, it has happened, as he showed in that movie, where, you know, these human nature, and you're walking around, everybody's armed, especially you're in the places like the godforsaken jungles of Vietnam, or if you're over in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, you can easily kind of get away from the, you know, just if somebody, you don't like somebody, boom, shoot them and just blame it on enemy gunfire or whatever. And I imagine it's easy to do. Just one of the many, you know, awful things about these wars that serve no purpose at all. Really can't. Half the time you don't have even an opposition, so they're not even wars. They're just, you know, occupations that serve no purpose except to enrich the military-industrial complex. So, so again, let's talk current events. We just, you know, just looking at some of the things that have been going on. You have, you know, again, this Biden administration is just it's mind-boggling, the tyranny. When you're talking about, you know, I believe that he is called, again, you know, white supremacist, the greatest threat, basically calling us terrorists, which is, you know, even crazier than, you know, naming anybody named Muhammad terrorist. It's insane, and people have to stand up to it. They absolutely have to stand up to it at some point. Oh, the chat room, yeah, thanks, Chris. Jessica Lynch, yeah, Jessica Lynch is another story, the same kind of thing, where they made up completely. And that one was that was really a Hollywood script, because, you know, obviously Jessica Lynch is a female soldier, and they wanted to make up this, you know, kind of G.I. Jane story where she was making this incredible stand, you know, as a female fighter. And, of course, the entire thing was bull. And it was proven that way, and they had to kind of, you know, kind of, but again, it gets far down the memory hole, and nobody acknowledges that these things are lies or why they lied about it. And that's the worst part of it, is that these things, they happen, and Yeah, there may be a retraction issued, but no one sense, very few people sense the pattern here. So, and again, why, as Cindy said, you know, trusting these people, you know, why would you trust anybody in the medical industrial complex? Why would you trust any politician at this point, really? Why would you trust anybody in the media? I mean, you know, and I tried to tell people, especially people that have Trump derangement syndrome, because they hate him so much irrationally, and it is a real syndrome, that they make they actually make heroic figures out of the most. I mean, George W. Bush, he's you know, the left kind of likes him now. Hey, you know, maybe he wasn't so bad because he said bad things about Trump, and that's all you have to do, really. And I made the comment, if Hitler was alive and if he had run against Trump, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure who would have won, to tell the truth. Here's another chat room. The CIA prison uprising that killed a CIA officer that American Taliban John Walker Lynch got blamed for. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's, and they, And people are getting blamed for things all the time that other people do, and it's wow. They denied my father ever served for decades. He was in Vietnam serving it starting in 68. Wow, that's an. I assume you mean the VA. I mean, it's Hitler's nephews in Long Island hated Trump. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah. Would they have voted for Hitler? I don't know. I assume they hated Hitler too. But yeah, that's the. That's the thing, is it went, and that's why I touched on a little bit with Cindy, but I didn't want to steal all her thunder. But if you're, those of you who might not have heard I protest and or read my writing, and I hope you read my stuff, and I hope you go to Substack, because I wrote one the other day that's getting a lot of play. It's getting a lot of reads and subscriptions and everything. And that's the, and it's titled The Undead Versus the Unvaccinated. And it's just, you know, I try to be provocative, especially with my titles. We, you know, if you look at, I don't know why anybody, but I'm sorry to hear that, definitely about Chuck's dad. I mean, that's just awful. That, but I mean, I think that you heard about, you know, certainly the treatment that has happened to VA veterans in the hospitals, and they really are used. They're the ultimate kind of it's literal cannon fodder, and they. Okay, and Chuck continues, his fabricated military records did not reappear until 2007. I was looking since 91. It's just the corruption is so deep. And I'm sorry, I know, you know, when it's your corruption, it pains to you. It's obviously more personal. And it's incredible. A comment in the chat room of the POW MII stuff in Hidden History is heartbreaking. You know, and that's, thank you for that. And Hidden History has been really successful, and it's doing really well. I, by the way, I found out the other day, I was reading an article online that where they were condemning Skyhorse, who's my main publisher, and it said Skyhouse's Hidden House of Horrors, and they were, you know, they were condemning them for publishing, and I'm in good company there. I mean, I'm proud to be associated with a publisher that publishes a Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Roger Stone, okay, well, but he was a successful author there. Jesse Ventura, Oliver Stone, and now Woody Allen. I didn't know they published Woody Allen's book, I guess, last year or the year before that. But what I was amazed at, I was looking, and I guess it's all the more reason to say, you know, why haven't I made any money? But I found out they had the amount, the totals that Woody Allen's book had sold, and A Hidden History has sold twice as many copies as Woody Allen's book. And they listed Roger Stone's book on the 2016 election. At the time, he was Skyhorse's top author as far as, you know, sales. And Hidden History has sold more than that. So I'm real proud of that. I you know, wish I had seen something more financially from it. But Skyhorse is not bad on the whole. Yeah, I mean, they do publish all sides. They published Michael Cohen's book, you know, certainly anti-Trumper. So they're fair. I mean, they are obviously the biggest publisher that someone who writes what I write about could get. So the Jeb Bush book did not do well. Not sure about Clinton's War on Women. I think Clinton's War on Women book I'm pretty sure that book did really well, but I don't know. I don't know how many copies it sold. Maybe might not have sold more than Hidden History. I don't know. But as Hidden History continues to do really well. I mean, I check my Amazon rankings all the time, and it's always higher than the others, 99% of the times. The chat room says, is there a trustworthy source to audit the royalties? No, and you know, that's why when finishing up my showbiz book, which I think the last I heard is going to be out November 1st. I'll be sure to promote that a lot here, On Borrowed Fame, Money, Mysteries, and Corruption in the Entertainment World. I could really relate to that because, you know, every time I look at my royalty statement, you know, it infuriates me, especially for Hidden History. As I said, you know, Hidden History is up. It's probably 30,000 copies now, or close, which in today's world is really, really good. I mean, it wouldn't have been very impressive 50 years ago, but today it's probably comparable to 500,000 copies, maybe back in the 70s. Someone says, I need to buy another copy, left my uncle my copy, and they moved and built a house, and I'm sure it's in a box in his attic. I appreciate that. You know, I still get, you know, comments on it a lot. There's a comment, Carolyn Graff was an interesting example of next to no one getting paid in JFK. Yeah, Carolyn Graff were the really the big was the big JFK. Thunder's Mouth was another one before Skyhorse. Said to the asked his about his uncle about it, he acted like he didn't know what he was talking about. Well, maybe he's just trying to abscond with my copy of, but or he's he just forgot about it. I don't know. Let's hope he's wants to you know, keep it. Yeah, just like the Hollywood accounting practices, and that's what I can relate to because. Oh, Jacob B., thank you. I appreciate that. That's for the comment. It's good to see you here. It's good to see some familiar names. You guys are starting to migrate over here. Hopefully you get a lot more. Chuck says, I need to get new copies of Hidden History myself. You know, I wish I had, you know, I the only copy of my books that I really have extra copies of is Bullyocracy. Because whatever else about Trine Day, and I certainly have my problems with Trine Day, they do give you a lot more copies than the other publishers. So I do have a lot of those, but Jacob says, Don, but he was at Mena, Arkansas when all that went down with the Clintons. Who was at Mena, Arkansas when all that went down with the Clintons? I'm not sure who you're talking about. Who was there then? As Chris says, Simon and Schuster now more dependent. Well, you know, the cool thing about Skyhorse now is they have some kind of arrangement with Simon & Schuster. So if you go to Simon & Schuster, whenever I try to promote myself to unknown people, I have a Simon & Schuster's authors page where three of my books, and you know, the three most successful ones, Hidden History, Crimes and Cover-Ups, and Survival of the Riches, are there. I'm sorry. Jacob is talking about that's his uncle. Oh, he was there. Wow, he was in there. He was an airplane mechanic, and all his tools were like, oh, man, maybe that's why he related to Hidden History on a whole different level. I don't know. Yeah, because I certainly wrote about Mena in there. Simon & Schuster being dependable, I don't know. They certainly have canceled. They're part of the cancel culture. They've canceled people when they have, including Josh Hawley. They canceled his book right away that was a critical social media. Chuck says, Survival of the Rich is my favorite so far, Don. And it is Maria Heller, our friends, too. I know. And it probably got the most critical acclaim, but it's like the little engine that could. It just, I don't know. Even Naomi Wolf, you know, being on the paperback as a forward, didn't really lift up sales that much. So I don't, you know, that's why I'm writing Hidden History 3, and I'll probably just write a bunch. I might, you know, there's so much history out there. I might just keep the Hidden History thing going because that's what people buy. Chris says the Unreal. So, Chris, you probably even have the Unreal. See, I wish more people would read my fiction because I really am more of a novelist, and that's what I consider myself. But I have two novels that I think are even better than the Unreals, and I do love the Unreals. It's my baby, you know, like first thing really I wrote that I completed that like that. But I can't, you know, find a publisher for them. And would be a good series. Yeah, Don Jeffries' Hidden History of the Magazine. I like that. Thank you, Chuck. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to. An agent told me that I can trademark the Hidden History thing. I don't know how to do that. If anybody knows how to do that, that would – because, you know, Hidden History, like Lamar Waldron, I think, you know, had the Hidden History of something. And the Hidden History appears in the title. But I'm the only one that I know of that just has the title Hidden History by itself. Jacob says, I want you to sign my copies, though. Yeah, well, if you Jacob and Chris, especially, I sent you a message, Chris, as well, too. Either I have plenty of extra copies of Bullyocracy. If neither one of you had that, just hit me up and I'll Chuck, you too. I don't know if you have Bullyocracy or not, too, but I can send you signed copies of those. Says, I was trying to figure out how to get a comic book artist to do sample pages of the Unreals for a graphic novel. And, you know, it would make a nice graphic novel, that's for sure. But now especially the Unreals would be so politically incorrect, you know, because remember I have three very prominent black characters in the Unreals, and I call them the Afro Anarchists. They're a doo-wop protest singers who also are, you know, aspiring rappers, because rap was, you know, again, I started writing the Unreals in the 80s as a young guy, and it just kind of kept going and going. I wrote so many versions of it and kept adding to it and changing it. Yes, Chuck, we did. Chuck, we did a show on Bullyocracy. Yes, we did. Cool. But I didn't know if I assumed you had the book yet. Chris said, yeah, sign Bullyocracy. You'd be free. Okay, well, you guys just send me your address. Definitely, you got it. I really appreciate the support and all the help. And in the Unreals, the black characters are, there's a lot. I do what I do all the time, and I've done it all my life. Like I wrote everything in it. So I wrote a lot of rap song lyrics in there, and, you know, protest Afro-anarchist doo-wop lyrics and so forth. There's a lot of racial slurs in there. There's a lot of cussing. A lot of drug use. I mean, it's just, it is, I don't know. I mean, I most people loved it, but Chris said, glad to do it. I wish I could do more. I don't know how you could do it anymore. You already, he said, I can't keep up with you as it is now. Chris is just, I think I've touched on this. I certainly have in my writing, but writing, just since I wrote Bullyocracy, which was my last book published, you know, you're talking about, not even 2 years, that researching these things. Now, it wasn't too bad with Unborrowed Fame because, you know, the showbiz stuff wasn't quite as controversial. But Shelley says, Adult Swim sounds like they might have to take that pitch. Yeah. Well, that would be great. Yeah, you know, and actually that probably would be the place for it. They have a lot of racial stuff on there, I know. But maybe get Mike Tyson. He was on the Mike Tyson Mysteries. Maybe he could play one of the voices. Chris says, finding more and more Sonny stuff. You sure are. There's so much Sonny Bono stuff there. I keep getting sidetracked here. Now the Unreals, especially like if it was to get a bigger publisher, it's a very small publisher. It's had two very small publishers, but it's certainly the language. The entire thing is politically incorrect from to its core. That's me. And I guess if more and more people found out about it, they'd probably discredit me on the basis of that. Love the Boondocks. researching the nonfiction now, it's just because, you know, I rely on search engines. And, you know, before I could just use Google at one time for Hidden History. You know, anybody who's read Hidden History knows it's, you know, it's got all this stuff in there. Child sex scandals. I mean, all these things that are way down the rabbit hole. You used to be able to find these things. Used to be able to find the links. You can't now. I mean, I'm still searching, and Chris can't even find it so far. I know that Anthony Fauci was in the center of that 1986 horrible Childhood Protection Vaccine Act, or whatever they misnamed it in Orwellian sense. that exempted vaccine makers from lawsuits, and you can't find it. Every search you do with it, you can word it however you want. They circumvent it. They don't want you connecting Fauci to that. It's amazing. Chris says, I went back and started using Lycos. Really? I didn't know Lycos was even still there. I didn't think of them. I mean, what was the dog pile I remember used to use? And, was it web crawler? I forget the original. Yahoo was the biggest one before Google. Chris says Family Guy. Okay, yeah, Family. Yeah, certainly Family Guy gets away with a lot of political incorrectness. And so does South Park. Would you see what happened with South Park? And I criticize this on my other show. I'm a big fan of South Park, but they really, really capitulated to the medical industrial complex with their vaccine special. Oh, that was just, it was horrible. All they did was just make, I mean, it might as well have been watching, Jimmy Kimmel or something. They just made fun of Trump and the people that were against the anti-vaxxers. Chris says the Fauci stuff is most likely in print somewhere from back in the day. We'll find it. Chuck says, after Family Guy did that vax propaganda episode, I tuned in. Yeah, I can't feel the same way about it. And I loved South Park. And they even look what they did with the Muhammad episode. I think they did that where they just kind of make fun of it. But and I even forgave them the 9/11 episode, which was, and I know they really feel that way because my son is a huge fan. We used to buy the DVDs, you know, people would give us gifts or whatever. And they would do commentary, and they did, you know, I listened to the commentary in the 9/11 episode, and they basically, yeah, we do think people that think 9/11 was a conspiracy are stupid. So, I mean, I don't know how you can be so insightful on so many things and just, you know, be unable to see through that kind of BS. But certainly with the vaccine they literally didn't even have Biden in the cartoon. And that was shocking. I mean, of all the presidents they've spoofed, and certainly Trump was very spoofable, but what could you do with Biden? I mean, what could you do with Kamala Harris? I mean, these guys are comedy gold. If Saturday Night Live was an honest show and was just out for laughs, you wouldn't. I can just imagine writing some great skits, you know, featuring Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and AOC. I mean, these the crew or whatever you call the squad or whatever you call them. I mean, these people are hilarious. They're the Waxine Waters. I mean, these are comedy gems. Chris said, yeah, they said, Jason said they folded. They absolutely did fold them. I don't watch TV. Don't miss it. Well, you're one of the characters I have in The Unreals. Jacob, if you haven't read The Unreals, you would love it, I think. And a lot of it, my fiction, I always get inspired from real life. I think most writers do. But one of the characters was inspired by several people, but Professor Buckley, he was a former history teacher at a local community college whose political views got him canceled. This was, again, way back when. You know, you're talking about I think I based The Unreals in 1987 or something like that. And when he first of all, he never slept. And I was fascinated by and again, the unreals, that used to be one of my favorite words. I used to call people unreals. And if you see people that knew me from back in the day, that was part of the vocabulary. You big unreal, you ridiculous unreal. We would do that. And they still respond that way. So it made it part of the vernacular. No, not William F. Buckley, Chris. No, this is Professor Hiram Buckley. But he and it was named after a guy, one of my friends at the time, whose last name was Buckley, who was inspirational to me. And I gave him quirky characteristics from several people. But when you mentioned about not watching TV, Jacob, that was his motto. You know, I threw my TV out back in 59. And that was based on a right-wing pharmacist in the hospital I used to use, the late, great Owen White, and I used a couple people like that who were dead, and they were never going to read The Unreals anyhow. I used their real names, and I was paying homage to them. And when I got to the place where I had all the surrealistic stuff happening and all the Unreals were everywhere, I introduced this guy. He was a right-wing pharmacist, which is what he was. He used to, in those days, you know, because I was a real lefty. And he used to besiege me. This is way before the internet. He would, I think he subscribed to every newsletter in the world. And he would constantly, oh, I've got a Donna. And he talked like Ward Cleaver. He looked like Hugh Beaumont and talked, which made it even greater. So he would tell me, because he would call me all the time because I was working midnight shift there as a young guy. He goes, Don, come on over here. We've got another care package for you. And I'd say, oh, cool. So I've got a chock full of right-wing material. And he's a really interesting guy. He'd been an FBI agent and something else and had somehow become a pharmacist, but really, really interesting guy. So I used that line from him because he said, you know, I threw my TV out in 59. Let's see here. Like the old timer curse, you started to say as I was typing, okay, I'm not sure what I was saying. Right-wing pharmacist with the cig hanging from us. Well, you know, I don't know. I never saw him smoke, so I'm not sure he smoked. But yeah, that would have been better probably. But no, he was a very colorful character. Picture Hugh Beaumont as a right-wing extremist, which he may have been in real life, actually. I've read about Hugh Beaumont that he was like a minister and he sold Christmas trees in the off-season. That's kind of stuff is in on borrowed fame. You'll find those little showbiz tidbits. Hard to find those old-timers. Oh, yeah, those old-timers, and I love them. You know, it's hard because, you know, here I am becoming an old-timer now. So I don't know, maybe some young people think I'm that interesting too. But Anon 800 says, what did the pharmacist think of JFK? Oh yeah, he thought they were all conspiracy. In fact, he's the one that is responsible for turning me onto what was the Spotlight back then, because you know he subscribed to that and he would give me all his issues of the Spotlight, and eventually I just started subscribing myself. And so they certainly ran tons of issues about stories about JFK and RFK. They were sued by E. Howard Hunt and William F. But was William Putt? No, E. Howard Hunt and Jack Anderson and somebody else. Were they sued by William F. Buckley? I'm not sure. But they, and of course, Mark Lane, you know, ended up representing Liberty Lobby. So for people that, whenever I mentioned it for a while, of course, now Liberty Lobby was driven out of business by the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center as anti-Semitic. And that was back when the left went along with everything Israel did, which is interesting. I didn't get to ask Cindy that, because that has been a sea change that has taken place with now the right, which at the time, the right, a lot of the right wing, you know, exemplified by people like Pat Buchanan, were very critical of Israel. On the left, just, you know, glossed over it, except, you know, people like Vanessa Redgrave and a few people like that in show business that were really far to the left, but already were concerned about Palestinian rights. But now it's gotten to the point where the entire left is so anti-Israel. It's amazing. Ben and Jerry the other, did you hear about that? I mean, these guys are two high profile left-wing Jews that are, you know, coming out and, you know, against that. And so Netanyahu comes out and says, guess whose company's being boycotted here or something. So it's all changed, because the Spotlight was a lot of what the Spotlight wrote now, the left would probably love, I think. Because they just tended, they did tend to be to a fault. They tended to blame Israel for everything. And Jacob says all the Spotlight stuff's online. Are they affiliated with the AFP? Yes, and that's what the Spotlight became. They morphed eventually into American Free Press, where I write now. Now they're not exactly the same. And thanks to my friend S.T. Patrick, who brought me on board American Free Press. I think he and I write the most articles every issue. I always have three articles in there. So we're their primary writers at this point, and both of us are certainly not right, but we at least started on the left. So we try to stay away from too much anti-Israel stuff, because they were easy to marginalize them as, you know, as anti-Semitic, which they weren't. But Chris says, remember when Cynthia McKinney told you about refusing to sign the oath? Absolutely, and that's why she's no longer in Congress. APAC, yes, sir. I found a whole bunch of Spotlight archives. Yeah, well, they're well, that's cool. That's good. And I, you know, they had no interest in me back then, because I remember as a young guy, I wrote a series on the Lincoln assassination for them, and I don't know why they weren't interested. But whereas Penn Jones was, you know, Penn Jones and the Continuing Inquiry. Back at that time, I was. I was a faithful subscriber to the Continuing Inquiry, as you know, it was the Bible of the JFK assassination research community back then. And that was when Gary Mack was still working for the good guys. Gary Mack did a lot of good work. And he was, and of course, my friend Gary Shaw, who I hope to have on this show, soon at some point. I've had on my other show, and one of my favorite, and I think one of the most unrecognized researchers, and that's all I'm going to have. I'm not going to, well, I don't know that any of the ones that the ones that are most well known now would come on my show anyhow, because they seem to have issues with me. Yes, I do have. And on eight, that says you have them. Ones I can find. I mean, what I did, I had so many because it was like Sports Illustrated. I subscribed to it for so long, I had to weed them out. So what I did, I went through years ago a lengthy process, and I like clipped out like articles that I thought were important. So I've got a bunch of them somewhere. I don't know. It says, do you still have the essay for the Spotlight and the published continuing inquiry essay? Well, the continuing inquiry, you know, I was going through my continuing inquiries for Hidden History 3, and I can't find the thing I wrote. I'm missing like one of the books of the, because I think I have every issue of it, but somehow one of my notebooks, and that includes my issue, is I think it was from early 83, I think, but I'm not positive. It's Who Really Killed JFK. It was front page of the continuing inquiry, big, you know, big time. I made the front page of Penn Jones, but I was happy. Put the link in because I can't find the one I'm looking for. Oh, okay. You're asking somebody else. So, you know, you had the left and the right. So the continuing inquiry, far left, they were influencing me, certainly the JFK stuff. And they published a lot of, that's where I learned about Mae Brussel from there, because they had a lot of her transcripts in there. And it's somebody I really, really would have loved to. Lots of people have told me that, you know, she would have, her and I would have hit it off really well. And in some ways, our friend Maria Heller, I think, is maybe the closest thing to Mae Brussel. I don't know. I don't know if Chuck would agree or not, but that's out there today. She reminds me a little bit of her, but I would have loved to have met her. I think that, although I don't know if Maria goes down the rabbit holes quite to the extent, because Mae was the first one that was, she basically, I don't know that she certainly inferred that they got it wrong about the Manson murders. And they did, because I think Manson, remember, Manson wasn't there. And I talk about that a bit in the Showbiz book too, that it's, you know, they really, in this way they frame things completely. So they get people thinking, they see the maniacal picture of, which might as well have, you know, been one of the school shooters. I mean, it was, you know, guilty. Anybody that sees that face that was plastered all over the front pages. But he was not at either of the crime scenes. So Manson killed no one. But Vincent Bugliosi, the G silent, as Jerry Spence would say, was able to convince people that, with his own ridiculous conspiracy theory, which was based on Helter Skelter, a song of the Beatles' White Album. He called, you know, they said that they did this because they were just listening to the Beatles' lyrics from the White Album, which is a weird, you know, an outlandish conspiracy theory if ever I heard one. But somehow this guy smears conspiracy theories. Chris says, I did the article collecting thing for 9/11 starting on 9/12. You're right there. Huh? I could probably find your article from the continuing inquiry. Just need the dates, info, etc. Well, it was called, I know it's on the, because I've seen it online at Weisberg's collection from Hood College. If you go to the Hood collection, yeah, if you search me, you'll find at least one letter that I wrote to him too. Benison, so obviously he kept it. So because I corresponded with him a few times. I met him on one notable occasion, which was very memorable, because he was every bit as grumpy as you thought he would be. And I was really intimidated by him, because he was I was a young guy and he was my hero. And he was nice, but he was, you know, you definitely couldn't mention Mark Lane. He never knew that I was affiliated with Mark Lane at all before. Otherwise, he probably would have thrown me out of his house. But you know, really a fascinating guy, obviously. Website I'm talking about is libertylobby.org. Yeah, Liberty Lobby. Of course, that was Liberty Lobby who published the and people that know the background on that Liberty Lobby was originally established by what was the guy's Curtis B. Dahl, I think his name was. It was Major or something. I think he was a colonel or something. I think he was a military guy. But he had been originally FDR's son-in-law. And he saw a lot of stuff inside. And certainly if you're around FDR, it's one of the big conspirators. So he was inspired at that time. He took a turn way to the right, and people don't realize again how things, different things were back then. That John Wayne, for instance, was a Jacob says Willis Cardo. Willis Cardo came along later. Curtis B. Dahl was the original founder of the, and Willis Cardo is the one that some of the trolls that used to follow me on social media used to constantly try to connect me. They wanted me to repudiate Willis Cardo and said, "What? What do you mean repudiate him? It's ridiculous. It was so stupid because they basically they wanted to associate me with Holocaust denial and the anti-Semitism, which is just ridiculous. So that's, you know, that's, so I don't play those games. So they eventually got tired of it. Let's see. What do you think, Mark Lane? Why do you think Mark Lane downplayed the Freddie Prinze JFK phone call? I don't know. Mark Lane, obviously he was my hero and not only my mentor, but I can never figure out why, but he did do that. He's, well, that, well, again, that was Penn Jones. You know, people, unfortunately, and again, I loved Penn Jones too. Never got to meet him, but I corresponded with him a few times. And he did publish, you know, my article, and then he published a little thing in Continuar, but it was a very small little blurb about Freddie Prinze. And it was based on, you know, my firsthand experience. But he told me, I think, in the note back that Lane denies it or doesn't remember it or something. So, but, you know, people have said, you know, have accused Mark Lane of being CIA, disinfo, as if almost everybody, you know, all researchers have been. But Mark Lane, maybe because he was the biggest, has been accused of it a lot. But people have also accused Penn Jones and an insider who had the right to know. I mean, I don't want to tell it, but it was basically a story that really made Penn Jones look suspicious. I don't know. You don't know who to believe. But on the surface of it, Mark Lane was a civil libertarian who influenced me a lot. And the fact that he ended up becoming Liberty Lobby's attorney, basically. In fact, the last time I talked to Mark Lane was when I was calling the Spotlight offices because I wanted to ask them, like, why they didn't want to publish my Lincoln series. And Mark Lane answered the phone. I thought, you know, that's – so I guess that tells you how many employees they had. But that's how he involved with – people don't realize that at the end, not only Liberty Lobby on its board of directors, that's why – and that's why I used to shut down the trolls that said repudiate Willis Cardo. I said, well, you know, Liberty Lobby, which published the Spotlight, had on its board of directors not only Victor Marchetti, who was a, you know, huge whistleblower in the CIA, or the CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, with John D. Marks, who's still alive, and I would love to try to get him on this show. But not only had him, they had Dick Gregory, comedian. Was Dick Gregory anti-Semitic or hateful? I don't know. Was he a racist? And they had Fletcher Prouty. Now, the JFK assassination research community loves Fletcher Prouty, but they hate Liberty Lobby. Well, you know, until, you know, about the time when Mark Lane made JFK, certainly Fletcher Prouty got a lot of attention from Oliver Stone. But until that time, the Liberty Lobby was paying him more attention than anybody. Okay, Jacob says, can't mention Liberty Lobby in the Spotlight without mentioning Michael Collins Piper. Yeah, there's Michael Collins Piper. Yeah, and that's another, you know, really tragic story. He died way too young. And I would love to have talked. I did email him a few times. In fact, I tried to get him to come on the JFK research forums way back in the day. And he told me he'd been on one once, and so he had a bad experience, shockingly enough. But yeah, that's why it infuriates me when Jim DiEugenio or some of these other people now talk about Israel, because again, it's become acceptable. Now the left is, you know, in lockstep against Israel, which is amazing. They literally used to call anybody anti-Semitic that criticized Israel on the left. Now the right does, because again, they've changed. And of course, they're all like Benjamin Netanyahu now. And it's, you know, the left is, the Muslims can do no wrong, even though we're still bombing and killing them, and they just kind of don't pay attention. And the right hates all Muslims. You know, basically, it's things have really changed. It's bizarre. But so, you know, when you look at people like Jim DiEugenio and people like that that have mentioned many times on the forums, they actually now talk about, they mention, you know, Israeli JFK and his battle with David Ben-Gurion, who was president of Israel. Behind the scenes, he was engaged in some very vitriolic exchanges about Israel's burgeoning nuclear weapons program. JFK didn't want them to have nuclear weapons. I think he's the last president that didn't want them to have it. And Michael Collins Piper was the first one to talk about that. Now, I don't think Israel was the main hand behind the assassination, so I'm sorry if you believe that. But certainly their influence was there. They had a motive, just like the people in the Pentagon did, just like the CIA did. J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, there's lots of Lyndon Johnson, lots of powerful forces I think came together to kill JFK. But Michael Collins Piper was never given the credit. He was smeared and demonized as being anti-Semitic by the research community. The same people, and in fact, when I jumped, one of the last times I posted on the forums, they had a thread about that, and I jumped in on it and at the end and said, hey, you know, you guys really ought to credit Michael Collins Piper's Final Judgment, which was the first book that introduced Israel into this equation. And they just, as most of my comments on the JFK forums recently, crickets, it killed the thread. So I don't know why that is. Didn't Penn Jones take Craig Roberts' son to go see the movie about his dad with suspicious guys accompanying and then his father's bags were gone? You're talking about Roger Craig. It was something like that, yeah. And it was Roger Craig Jr., who's been on my show with, along with Steve Cameron. We'll probably have to have them on this show, too, if people listening have not heard him. Interesting story. But, yeah, it was – I don't know if it's exactly that, but it was something like that. It was very kind of strange behavior on Penn Jones. I don't know. Is there anybody you can trust? Don, have you ever talked to Ralph Epperson, who wrote The Hidden Hand? No, I have not. I've heard him. I have not talked to him. The Unseen Hand. Are you still in touch with Lenasonic and Jimmy Church? Jimmy Church, I don't know who that is. I'm not sure who Jimmy Church. Lenasonic, John Barber told me, because Len, you know, he's not a big fan of Trump. And again, I am not either, but, you know, because I'm critical of Trump's enemies, I sensed that maybe Len, I'd fall out of favor with him, but apparently not, because Len told John Barber, as John Barber told me on the site, that he was listening to the audio version of Hidden History, and he thought it was something. John is always over the top with his praise, but it's something like breathtakingly brilliant or something like that. So maybe I'll be back on his radio program. I don't know. I hope so. I mean, certainly I know nothing against him. I enjoyed it when I was on way back in the day. Fetzer is all in with the Israeli stuff. Yeah, and Fetzer, you know, again, part of me wants to interview Jim Fetzer because he really is a hell of an interesting guy. You know, I mean, there's so many things you can talk about, but if you don't know him, his personality is such that he's gotten booted off every platform he ever had. He was working with Veterans Today for a long time. He had a falling out there. He's just got a really difficult personality, which is that kind of personality dominates in the JFK research community. Anybody who's been in it knows. But Fetzer's, you know, I don't call anybody disinfo agent. I don't know that. You can't prove it. He could just be incredibly eccentric, but certainly his, you know, he's falling for everything, including the, you know, which I don't think too many conspiracy theories are ridiculous, but I don't think Paul McCartney was replaced by a duplicate and died in 1966. I just don't. But he believes that, and he certainly the question right now is, Fitzer still talking Zapruder, Sandy Hook, Paul is dead. Yeah, and of course the Sandy Hook thing, by writing a book with the title he did. I hesitate to even say the title because I don't know what I'm using against me, but you don't. And Wolfgang Halbig made a little bit of that same mistake. And I, you know, I'm writing thanks to Chris. I mean, there's tons and tons of information he's been able to unearth that was, I'd forgotten about with Sandy Hook. But there's the official story of Sandy Hook is ridiculous. But I don't make any declarations that I know what happened. I don't say anything about parents or anything like that. I'm just telling you what the information says. Explain it. Fetzer is, he makes, and that's what he does about everything. He makes declarative statements. This has been proven. Obviously, and that's where he turned so many people off. And he interviewed me on his Real Deal show. It's the first interview I ever had many years ago before I had only had the Unreals published. And it was about Natalie Holloway's case, which I was investigating then. I still have a mostly completed book out there about that. I don't know. Maybe it'll be published someday. I haven't really tried. But and he sandbagged me. I mean, and this is, I mean, I can't tell you, if you knew the politics of the JFK assassination research community forums, I was this guy's only friend. I defended him over and over again when he was, you know, wanting to be banned. And I made so many enemies because of that. And I stood up for, and he never really reciprocated. He privately told me, I appreciate it very much. You're a great guy and all that. He sandbagged me on the air. And he's, that was, you know, well, that was before, that was maybe 2011 or something, 2010. But ever since Hidden History was published in 2014, he's, as far as I know, is he has never mentioned me one time. He's never mentioned Hidden History or anything else. So I don't know. You know, it is what it is. Chuck says, I tried to reason with Jim F. It's impossible. Yeah, it is. He's just, he's so blustery and bombastic. It's just, it's not worth it. Would I interview Judy Wood or Rebecca Ross? Sure. I think Judy Wood, one or both of them I tried. I don't know if they both have contact info, but I've tried to get in touch, but they never got back to me. His shows with Giuseppe Vaffanculo and David Scorpio are pretty good. They're on BitChute, posts all the time. Yeah, I mean, a lot of Fetzer stuff. He made a lot of great points. It's just personality got in the way. He still does the real deal. Yeah, he does. Roth stopped talking to me over Trump, I think. Chuck says, well, Trump has destroyed a lot of relationships. Jacob says, the one to listen to is Need to Know News. Okay. I'm not sure I know that. I know No More News, Kate, which is run by that guy. What's that guy's name? But he's my Facebook friend, but I tried to get him on my show a couple times and he never answered me. So, I mean, you talk about, I don't even remember his name myself. And I've touched on this before, what I call conspiracy celebrities. And he didn't really even qualify as a conspiracy celebrity. But this guy is, you know, he's too cool to get in touch back with me. I don't think so. But what was Adam? Is it Adam Green or something? I can't remember the guy's name. But Jim Fetzer Sandy Hook book has old photos, what looks like to be Coroner Wayne Carver and other officials who claims were there the night before the Sandy shooting. Yeah, I would like to verify that because that's huge if that's true. If you tried to reach out to Whitney Webb since you all started the new show. No, she hasn't answered my last several emails. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Cindy said maybe she's busy. I don't know. I don't know what she could have against me, but I seem to have this effect on people. I don't know. I go on their shows and they love me and they got to have you back. And then I hear from them again. I don't know. I mean, that's happened way too many times. I don't know. Roth has a weird background. I don't know. Blacklisted News is hit and miss lately. Chuck says, I there's so many of them out there. I can't keep up with them. Fetzer has a couple of diff shows. Yeah, he does. Adam Green. Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah. No More Fake News. John Rappaport. Well, John Rappaport, speaking of people, John Rappaport, who I absolutely love. I had him on an early show, and right when this COVID thing started, he was right on target with his mentioning how they were using, you know, untested presumptive cases, which they are. And but he hasn't answered my last several emails. I don't know why. I only thing I can figure is because Jeff Rentz, who's another divisive guy, apparently, he gives me a great platform. He has a large audience. I hear from people almost every day now that they hear me on Rants and Discover Me. So I love that. And he lets me say whatever I want. I don't agree with him on some things, but Jeff likes me and he promotes my work. But I think him and Rappaport had a falling out. And I can only think that Rappaport heard me on there and knows I'm on there all the time. And because Rappaport used to be on there all the time. And I guess that, I don't know what else it'd been. Let's see. Fetzer asked Wayne Carver about his photo the night before the court. Yeah, I tried to follow that deposition, but Carver was ridiculous. He didn't really answer much. Chuck says, this is why you and I need work together. We get ghosted with nothing's place. Yeah, I don't know. What is it we do? I don't know. It's like, it reminds me of the old dating days, you know, where you thought everything went well and then boom. No more dates. You don't know why. What did I do? I don't know. But get Mike Williams on the show. Also, Brett Stevens from America.org. You won't be disappointed. I think you mentioned before. Yeah, I'm trying. I don't know. And certainly Kimberly knows I've given her enough names. I'm a little disillusioned that but of course I am shooting high. I admittedly that. Alex Jones and Joe Rogan need to have you on. Well, I was on InfoWars The very first interview I gave after Hidden History, InfoWars Nightly News, interviewed by Rob Dew, introduced by David Knight. But never asked me back. They did buy hundreds of copies of Hidden History, and they sold out, but they never bought any of my other books. I don't know why. But I really don't. Again, I'm sure after Trump that I wasn't going to be on there because Alec, it was all, and that's why David Knight, and I know now, you know, I was supposed to be on, because my friend Tony Arteburn, wonderful supporter, he was the guest host for David Knight many times and also Owen Troyer. I was scheduled to go on Owen Troyer's show, and literally 5 minutes before I was supposed to be on, Tony messaged me and said, I've been pulled. So Alex Jones pulled him at the last minute. He hasn't been back on. And I'm sure it was because David Knight had been fired recently, and somehow, because David Knight was on iProtest, he was on my show. I think he, you know, he connects my name with him, I guess. I don't know. Certainly Joe Rogan doesn't answer John Barber. And John Barber, you know, has much more reason to be offended than Chuck and I do. This is a guy who was, you know, I host iProtest. He hosted Real People, which is the number one show on television. This guy was a big.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation. Revelation through conversation.